You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And it's brought to you by you, dear listener, you. Thank you to our patrons supporting us every week at patreon.com/UK Tech. If you're a patron, this is, of course, your extended ad-free version of this week's show. And if you're not, but would like to get our ad-free versions, our extended cuts, live streaming, and access to our 24/7 Discord members club, head to patreon.com/UK Tech and find out how you can support us with no commitment at all. And thank you very much to Neil Fisher, who's our most recent patron who joined us this week. He's also sent an email that's coming up a little later on in the show. Although, just to clarify, this isn't a pay-to-be-read service. It's just pure coincidence that Neil's joined us as a patron and we're reading his email. We will read people's emails, even if they don't support us financially. But I'm pretty sure, Ian, that was already very clear, wasn't it?
I believe so.
But all welcome at hello@techpodcast.uk. Ian, I think it is time to put our hands to one side, then above our heads, and then swan dive straight forwards into the concrete ocean that is Facebook's week this week. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg has said he will not appear before a UK parliamentary committee to give evidence in the wake of allegation that information on millions of its users was misused. Now, this is according to me this week, because I was covering this for Bloomberg. Damian Collins, he's the head of the committee that's also investigating the impact of social media on recent elections, not just those in Britain, had invited Zuckerberg to answer for what he called a catastrophic failure of process. You remember that, mate?
Yes, indeed, I do. It was only last week.
It was, but I know how your brain gets a little foggy around this time of year. He'd asked him to come, and Zuckerberg replied in the form of a letter, which was delivered to Collins, saying that he has asked one of his senior deputies to attend instead. I was covering the hearing, actually, the one that was being held this week, where they were gathering evidence from whistleblower Wiley, which lasted 4 hours, incidentally. And don't envy me for having to cover a 4-hour parliamentary committee hearing, but that is what I do, you know, as part of my day job. But during that, Collins had almost made fun of the CEO. It came across as quite jocular to me, almost joking that he was just going to send one of his juniors. But he did also say he was still going to ask Zuckerberg to appear. Now, to me, this is frankly embarrassing for Facebook, in my personal opinion. And I was on Bloomberg TV week before last. It was before Zuckerberg had responded, but after Collins had asked him to appear. And I'd said that anything short of Zuckerberg appearing before the committee would just look like a PR disaster. And that's exactly what's happening. He's agreed to appear in front of a US congressional committee hearing, I believe, in the US, which will be very awkward because, you know, I don't think Zuckerberg's the best speaker under intense pressure, and it's certainly contributing probably to why he doesn't want to do so in Britain. But this just looks like he's hiding behind a deputy, don't you think?
Yeah, Ian? I do think that, and I think it's an absolute disgrace. I assume they don't have the option of demanding he appear. Subpoena him or anything.
No, because he's not a British citizen. That's key here. So they can ask, you know, and if anything moved into sort of criminal territory, then obviously there can be warrants out. But, you know, they can't force him to appear at this point. They can just ask repeatedly.
It is a bit rude, isn't it? To, you know, because essentially he's if he annoys them enough, they'll legislate, won't they? And he does not want that.
Well, there have been a lot of calls to legislate for better regulation of social media companies in the UK. This also came up this week, actually, that we should have a more robust body for you know, appeals processes and oversight. Essentially, creating a social media an Ipsos, the press regulation, but not regulation board, the independent body that oversees the press, newspapers and magazines. It was Margot James, one of the politicians in DCMS, actually, that had posited this, and we did a story about it, in fact, at Bloomberg. But, you know, that's down the line. At the moment, we've still got to sort out what exactly Facebook's going to do to defend itself. Nick in the Discord, in the chat room right now, is saying it's a disgrace. He's CEO of one of the biggest companies in the world that more people use than any other company. He can't front up. And I agree. And I honestly think that's how it's going to be seen over here, this side of the pond. You've got this giant company that's got 2 billion users, over 2 billion users, you know, and a giant percentage of the UK population. This is centered on Cambridge Analytica and a lot of stuff that's been happening here in Britain with Alexander Nix and friends. And yet he won't come and appear. I think he's going to get quite a bit of stick for that on this side of the pond, I have to say.
Well, I mean, I just think it's the least he could do, really, as a way of saying, look, okay, I accept that, you know, we've made a big mistake here, and we're going to correct it, and here's how. I mean, they will give him a pretty big time, a pretty hard time, I would imagine, and I can see why he would think it would be a bad idea to appear, because he'll make himself look kind of stupid, I think. But even so, he should have been doing it, really.
Yeah. Nick was asking in the chat room, did I mean the Independent Press Complaints Commission? No, I mean IPSO, which is the Independent Press Standards Organization. I think that's what it stands for. It was suggested that we had one for social media companies, you know, not just in the wake of what's happening with Facebook right now, but also relating to hate speech, abuse online, trolling, all that kind of stuff. And if these companies are not able to regulate themselves, and the suggestion is that they cannot, at least not to the standards of the British government, then someone needs to do it for them. And we have someone that does that for newspapers and magazines, and we don't for social media, who are largely these days, if anything, more influential, at least in terms of spreading and disseminating information. And there's no regulatory oversight. So that may well be something that changes. And then, of course, we've got the issue of Europe. There's 500 million people in Europe, and it's very, very likely that regulators over there are going to want to speak to Zuckerberg as well. So this is a mess, in my opinion. It's a PR mess, probably waiting to get worse before it gets better. But yes, let us know any thoughts you have on the issue. hello@techpodcast.uk.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ian, we're going to talk about Ireland, Republic of.
Republic of.
In the context of Netflix. And that is because more than 2 in 5, or 42%, of Irish households now subscribe to Netflix, according to the results of ComRegis Ireland Communications Survey 2017. Did you catch that deep report, Ian?
I did not.
Well, don't worry, the Irish Times did. And it wrote up that if 42% of Ireland's 1.24 million fixed residential broadband subscriptions were to be used to access Netflix, which is in line with the survey sample, that would suggest that about 521,000 people in the Republic of Ireland that have Netflix, which is...
That's staggering, really.
It is. And, you know, this figure on its own, and we're using this as a little bit of a segue into the next sort of bigger story about Netflix. But I looked at what the current figures are for the UK. I didn't find a consistent standard, but I looked at Statista, which said that there are now 22.7 million households in the UK with fixed line broadband. And then separately, according to Barb, the Broadcast Research Board, there's now 8.1 million households in the UK that have Netflix subscriptions. So I did the maths. That suggests that Netflix is in 36% of homes in the UK. So a little under what the Republic of Ireland has, although by comparison, in the US, the figure's about 54% of households. So much wider present penetration, and obviously in a larger, much larger market too. But I thought this was interesting because it suggests that in the Republic of Ireland, they're missing something that we here in the UK do not, the BBC iPlayer. And the BBC says it's being squeezed out by Netflix and Amazon. It is the iPlayer toothpaste being squeezed, or squozen, if you like, with intense thumb pressure, just getting that last little bit of minty entertainment out of the nozzle. That's because this story is that the BBC has released its second annual report since its new charter was established, and the broadcaster has painted a rather bleak picture for itself, according to Engadget this week. It says it's being squeezed out of the market by, quote, a small number of US-based media giants with extraordinary creative and financial firepower. Their business models and huge budgets mean we are increasingly being squeezed out of an ever more competitive environment. British creativity and British content are now under real threat. It said in this in a conclusion to the report that this year it's going to see further improvements for iPlayer, or we're going to see further improvements for iPlayer, including enhancements to the user experience, more personalization, more live content. And it says, quote, we continue to look at increasing the availability of some content. Now, before we move to the radio side of this, I don't really think that the reason Netflix is potentially squeezing out the BBC iPlayer is anything to do with a lack of personalization or user experience. I think it is entirely down to content, which was the last point that they raised here. And it strikes me that the BBC is sitting on a gold mine, you know, its archive, and it has been dripping that out onto the platform. But stuff disappears after 30 days, largely because it's a catch-up service. And it's sitting on decades of programming that could be made available on the iPlayer for streaming.
Yeah. But it doesn't own a lot of it, does it? That's the problem.
And Stephen Huxtable in the live chat is saying right now as well that there's rights issues, and absolutely there are rights issues. But, you know, there's got to be a workaround to this. You know, they're sitting on this archive of stuff. There's got to be a large portion of it that can be made available, or the rights issues can be.
Well, they could start negotiating better deals and start thinking about Brought TV as an on-demand first service. So, for example, there is nothing stopping them from saying that they want to renegotiate the deals they have with their commercial partners for, you know, production companies and the like, and say, look, you know, once we've commissioned a program, it's essentially ours to put on iPlayer in perpetuity. But they've got to somehow convince the providers of that content that that's an acceptable idea. But that's what Netflix does. You know, I mean, Netflix isn't entirely involved in all of the... I mean, obviously, there are a lot of things on Netflix that are Netflix originals. But it also does do deals with third parties. And I imagine a lot of those shows, whilst they are badged as Netflix originals, will have been made by an independent production company. So I kind of feel like... it's perhaps a negotiating problem for the BBC here that they're treating on demand as they have always treated broadcasts, and that's not the way the world works anymore.
Al Struthers in the live chat right now also highlights that it's a problem with the kids stuff as well, and that you go on Netflix and there's hundreds of episodes that you want to watch, and Amazon as well, but always very few on the BBC iPlayer, because a lot of it is sort of it's contained within this 30-day. Catch-up window. But I was thinking, you know, for example, there are shows that the BBC owns the rights to, like Dragon's Den, right? Dragon's Den, they do sell
it
those.
It doesn't own the rights to Dragon's Den. It's Sony. It's like a production deal, so they have a certain amount of... they get a certain amount of time. It might be a year or whatever, or 30 days, and that's it. The thing is, there are very few programs, because the Dragon's Den is based on some...
Yeah, it's an endomorph format from Japan, I think, or something.
Right, yeah, that's what I was going to say. I thought it was Japan. Yeah, and it's I don't know why it's ended up being Sony, but it's difficult. That is the problem. This started decades ago with the BBC, where they were, you know, very much forced into a situation where they need to commission in a lot of external stuff, and BBC production was largely shut down. It was considered too disruptive to the industry. So they said, well, you'll have to commission in now. And with that comes the fact that commissioned programs retain are the rights to which are retained by the original company that made them. There are very few BBC formats which are owned, wholly owned. Doctor Who, Top Gear, those are some of them. But most of the things like Spooks, are always external companies. And they take those ideas to the BBC and pitch them. So it's not like the BBC comes up with ideas and then sort of farms the production out.
Well, I mean, Dragon's Den, by example, I've just been looking this up because I didn't actually plan on us going down this rabbit hole, partly because it turns out I don't know all the information here. But it says, you know, the format is owned by Sony Pictures, but it's based on the Japanese series and has been produced by BBC Manchester since its first broadcast.
The contract will have been... I mean, Dragon's Den started after iPlayer was introduced, so it would have been in the contract. But the contract would say something like, "You will give us the rights to show the program for 30 days, and there will be a number of repeat plays that they'll have rights to." But you would not be able to show an episode of season one of Dragon's Den now on TV. It would be absolutely impossible. They'd have to rebuy rights for that season. So a lot of those things will never be seen again on TV anyway. They go into Sony's archive and it would then be able to sell them later on to Netflix. You can see examples of that on Netflix where obviously the BBC does a lot of, this is another point to make, the BBC sells a lot of its own content to Netflix where it probably shouldn't be doing that. It should be saying, here are all the episodes of Top Gear on iPlayer, rather than Here are all the episodes of Top Gear on Netflix. That makes no sense. But again, I think that's complicated slightly by the fact that BBC Worldwide pays a lot of money to make Top Gear. The BBC's own production budget can't sustain Top Gear. So therefore, the Worldwide has to get involved and it wants a piece of the action. And that piece of the action is global TV rights and streaming. So, yeah, what can you say?
Well, I can just say that I'm just annoyed. I mean, you could buy the first series of Dragon's Den, first couple, on DVD because BBC released those. But you can't buy, to my knowledge, any of the rest of them. And you can't stream them anywhere. And I've looked on iTunes. You can't buy them.
Yeah, I was going to say, are they on iTunes?
No,
yeah.
They're not. So it's like, this is my point, right? And this is the challenge that the BBC could try and overcome somehow. Is that this is content that exists, that's good, but is completely unavailable anywhere to buy, other than, you know, obviously on you know, torrent services and YouTube probably and things like that. It doesn't exist. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that surely the BBC, if it wants to be this home for British content, it needs to be pulling in a much larger amount of this material and making it available, even if it costs. You know, perhaps this whole idea of a commercial iPlayer has some legs if it would allow this kind of thing to happen and really rival the likes of Netflix. But it changes the model entirely from being a catch-up service for UK license fee payers to a destination in its own right up against the likes of Amazon and Netflix. But that's, I don't see any other way around it.
No, there isn't a way. And also, you've got to remember that the BBC has operated like this for years with DVDs. The DVD releases of things were also catastrophically badly managed. And again, it comes down partly to rights and partly to the fact that a lot of the time it costs too much to make a DVD, so they just don't bother. And then those programmes get put in a tape storage facility somewhere. I don't even know if the BBC keeps a lot of those third-party productions. They may feel that it's not their job and they must rest with the production companies. So not only have you got all the issues with the rights themselves, but you've also then got to track down the copy of the program and you've got probably going to have to pay some money to get that out of an archive somewhere or something. You know, it just gets completely and utterly impossible to manage. And that's why I suspect it doesn't happen. It's not a lack of will.
I don't believe at all it's a lack of will. I think the will is very much there. It's the financial obligation and perhaps some restrictions on imposed by the charter and by the, you know, BBC Trust and things like that, which is obviously not something that Netflix has to worry too much about. And obviously the fact that it's it's free at the point of use, at least. It's not something that people feel like they're signing up for. But the chat room's very active at the moment and talking a lot about radio and podcasts. And the BBC has, as part of this study, not study as such, it's a report, isn't it? It suggested a revamp, a complete revamp of its iPlayer radio platform to fold in its huge library of podcasts too. Now, this, again, to me, feels like an interesting opportunity to add other podcasts. I don't know, maybe UK-focused technology shows, if they wanted to be a bigger destination for audio as well. I'm not suggesting they create something to rival the iTunes podcast library, but if you're a home for British, specifically British audio, then I could see that being a very interesting opportunity to become a destination for that kind of stuff. Otherwise, everything gets very homogenous and you know, the differences between the platforms are very murky, I would say.
It's everything about it is like it's two sides fighting, and it causes a problem, and it means that the general public is not getting as good a deal out of it as they should be. And it's all down to, you know, the fact that everyone complains constantly about the BBC, including other broadcasters.
Well, if you have a complaint or a compliment about the BBC, whether or not you're at one of the other broadcasters, then let us know. hello@techpodcast.uk. Let's talk about dumping, Ian. It's time to talk about dumps, because according to a headline on the Register this week, Europe dumps 300,000 UK-owned .eu domains into the Brexit bin. I loved this headline. It's clunky and inelegant, but kind of fun. And the story follows. In an official statement Thursday, the European Commission announced it will cancel all 300,000 domains under the .eu top-level domain that have a UK registrant, following, obviously, Britain's eventual departure from the EU. This is all according to the Register still. Now, this means that if a UK person, i.e. you or me or a business, owns a .eu web address, they will no longer be able to renew them. In fact, no one will be able to sign up for a new one at all. And there is suggestion that current ones may stop working the moment Britain leaves the EU with no right to appeal. According to this document. Well, there is a bit, because rather too low down in the Registered article, in my journalistic opinion, is that there's a glimmer of hope for these individuals who may be suffering from this, in that the EU's announcement does note that its decree is, quote, subject to any transitional arrangement that may be contained in a possible withdrawal agreement, meaning essentially it could form part of a Brexit deal as agreed by Theresa May and friends.
I cannot imagine them bothering that with that.
Historically, my faith in the technological abilities of the government has been...
are not good.
Not good. But also, I just don't think it's that much of a priority. That's the other problem. And unless somebody can slack an economic cost to not doing this, then I don't see this being a priority. But I imagine it's one of these things that may not get agreed upon at the time and gets agreed slightly after the fact, and possibly all could be saved. But if not, I mean, this is a real pain. I mean, it's great business probably for people in the business of web services, redirects, things like that. It's not good for the registries that exist to sell this domain.
Well, I would also say that I suspect that unless they're forced to do it, they wouldn't kick anyone off. I think that definitely may stop people from renewing, and I think that's absolutely reasonable. Like, I don't see why you should be able to buy or renew an EU domain if you're not in the EU.
But it's the whole point of the EU. It's that's how this is meant to work. And certainly on an individual basis, it's probably not a great deal of scrutiny going into that. But if you're a very large corporation, you probably have to be quite careful about how you tread in that regard. But it's just another unknown in the Brexit process. But if somebody is aware of having a .eu address in the UK, then it might be something you want to look into or raise with your business. If you care to do so. And if you are affected or think you might be affected by this, we'd be very interested in hearing about it and hearing about how you could maybe address it. And do send that to us at hello@techpodcast.uk. Not .eu. Ian, let's step into our news bag, shall we? And rummage around, see what we can find in here. We've got one from Neil. Here's our newest patron. Welcome, Neil, and thanks for this email. And this is a great email, and this is one that I know that one of our regulars, Richard Taylor, will probably have an opinion on. He says, "Hi, Nate and Ian. Just curious on what your thoughts are. I currently live in a narrowboat, and therefore have no access to landline broadband. So I have the top SIM-only deal with Three, which gives me unlimited everything except tethered data. I only get 30 gigabytes. To overcome this, I put my SIM card into an old Android phone and run an app to hide my tethered usage. My current data usage is about 120 to 150 gigabytes per month. I would pay a bit extra for unlimited tethering if I could, but as far as I'm aware, this isn't an option with the network, and I think I would have usage limitations with mobile broadband. Just curious on your thoughts of me doing this, both morally and legally. I don't know if I'm breaking any laws doing this or if the networks just frown upon it. P.S. Love the show and just subscribe to Patreon." Thank you very much, Neil, both for the email and the patronage. Ian, what's your thoughts on this?
No, there's not breaking any laws, is he? But I mean, morally, I guess you could argue it's... Well, no, even then, they're just not paying attention properly, are they? If you can circumvent their stupid checks with a single app, then ultimately they're not that serious about preventing it, are they? I think that I have a lot of sympathy. I think it would be much more realistic for companies to offer a large amount of data for users who need it. And there are lots of people who rely on 4G. As it stands, it's generally unaffordable to have a very large amount of data, particularly for tethering. I also get 30 gigs on 3, because that's, I think their standard is only to offer that and nothing more. If you can get away with it, I'm all for it.
I would support that to a large extent, because I don't think 120 to 150 gigabytes per month is actually that much data. I remember when I went away our mini moon, our sort of first honeymoon straight after the wedding last year, we were in a cottage in Wales that had, internet so bad as to be unusable. And so we were tethering for the whole time. And I think we talked about it on the podcast at the time, in fact, that I used something like 90 gigabytes or something over that period, and admittedly we were uploading a lot of pictures, but we weren't using it for things like BitTorrent or downloading multiple seasons of TV shows. We were using it for what we actively needed at the time. So I could totally believe 120 to 150 gig per month is fine, and on top of that, you've got unlimited data on your phone. There's nothing stopping you on your phone leaving Netflix streaming 24 hours a day for the entirety of the month, and you'd probably easily hit that figure. So they're not stopping you using the data. They put that in to prevent people using it as a replacement for fixed line broadband and using up a terabyte a month. In fact, I'm just looking at my usage figures now because I'm currently doing a restore on my iCloud drive to re-download stuff. And since about 12 o'clock today, I have used 190 gigabytes of data on my fiber optic connection in 6 hours. So that's why they don't want you using unlimited tethering. It's for people like me streaming that amount of data in half a day. So I think 120 to 150 is perfectly fine, and you're certainly not breaking any laws. You might be in breach of a contract, but the worst they'll do is cancel it and get you to pay up for the rest of it. I think you're probably fine, is my opinion. Anyone else having this this thought or have alternatives that we could present to Neil, do let us know. hello@techpodcast.uk. Mr. Morris, do you want to take this next email from Giles?
Sure. Yeah. "Love the show, but I thought you and Ian missed a couple of important details on the Uber crash story. I've also seen the video, and I don't think it gives an accurate description of what the human driver would have seen because the video's dynamic range is so poor. It gives a false impression that the driver can only see the pool of light cast by the dipped headlamps, with much of the scene, including the sky, being featureless black matte. The human driver should have used full beams if the road was unlit, but was not paying proper attention to the road because the car had not given them enough to do, to the point where they were only occasionally glancing up at the road. In a normal car, the driver would have had the headlamps on full, and it would have made them easier for them to see the pedestrian and for the pedestrian to see them, avoiding the accident altogether. I've heard several stories about the quality of Uber's self-driving system over recent months, and I'm not surprised this accident is down to them. While I look forward to the widespread adoption of driverless technology, there needs to be appropriate checks in place before driverless systems are let loose on the roads. This could include a driving test-based simulation data for existing captures that proves the system is many times safer than a human. Reckless experimentation on public roads will destroy confidence in this technology. Kind regards, Giles. I mean, I agree with that. Obviously, you know, these sort of things, when they go wrong, are catastrophic for the wider market.
Yeah, I agree. And it is something that we didn't really think about, because if you're taking a photograph of a scene, a very, very high contrast scene, which this very much was at the extreme end of, you had a very bright spot on the floor where the light is. The design of cameras, unless they're HDR, processing in HDR, they're having to underexpose the scene in order for that bright bit, which it thinks you want to see, you know, to remain visible and in focus. Whereas if it was a bright scene with a human eye, you would see more detail. Perhaps I think that's what Giles is getting at.
Yeah, I do, and I agree, and I can sort of see the point. I'm not going to blame anyone for the accident. It's too difficult, really, and it's not for us to do that kind of thing. But you know, I have some sympathy. I don't know whether main beam would have helped. I feel like this was a very, very odd accident, and the kind of one of those things that where these. A set of circumstances created a situation that probably wouldn't happen a lot. But, you know, I can't disagree with most of it. We have to make sure that these systems are better and can save more lives than having humans driving would.
Well, thanks again, Giles, for the great email. And if anyone has any comments on that message or the topic, of course, do let us know. hello@techpodcast.uk. We did have a long email from Ross, which we're going to get to next week, because we had basically too much to discuss this week. But thank you, Ross. We'll get to you next week. Let's check in with Tom Merritt of Daily Tech News Show and find out what's been going on this week in the wider world of tech.
Hey, thanks, y'all. This week on Daily Tech News Show, we try to understand the regulation of cryptocurrencies, try to understand Apple's attempt to break back into the education market, discuss whether the swing to the cloud and the edge will ever swing back on premise, dig a little into Microsoft's reorganization and its Microsoft 365 subscription service, and discuss space tech with a roundtable of people who have actually worked or are working in the industry. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Thank you, Tom. News in space, Ian. Hey, actually, I wonder, how long before we need a daily space news show?
Well, why not have one now? I mean, it's not like there's a lack of news from space.
No, although I always find the concept of news from space being so interesting. It's like when they discover a quote-unquote new dinosaur. It's not really a new dinosaur. It's a new discovery, but it's not a new dinosaur, is it? And so,
sure,
in
I think
space,
they just have to use normal English to make it, you know, possible for people to understand what they're going on about.
Yeah, like when they talk about a new supernova. Like the supernova probably happened millions of years ago, so it's not new. It's newly discovered.
It's a bit like criticizing people for, you know, claiming the peanut is a nut when in fact it isn't a nut.
You're a nut. but yes, good listen to DTNS this week about the new iPad. We're going to cover that as well next week, because I'm meeting Apple on Wednesday to talk to them about it, use it, get one, and also talk to the head of European education. So I sort of felt, you know, you guys listen to this show, you know Apple's got a new iPad, you don't need me to recount that. But we will do a bit of actual hands-on stuff and what I learn about the sort of priorities here in the UK next week. So any questions about that, do send them, of course, to the usual address, hello@techpodcast.uk. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. Do send any comments always to the usual address. You can follow us on Twitter @TextMessagePod. We're almost hitting 600 followers on there, which is fantastic. And thank you, of course, to our beautiful patrons for supporting us every week at patreon.com/UK Tech. And thanks to our patrons who have joined us this week in the chat room. We've had a buzzing chat room with many, many people listening live this week. It's great fun. So thanks, everyone, for joining us. Nick Gassman, I know it's your first time listening to us live, and so thanks for listening and for joining in, chatting to us while we've been recording. It's fantastic. Ian, I will see you next week.
You sure will, mate.
I sure will.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.